Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Dushka Hatton, an Alexander Technique teacher and craniosacral therapist who lives in London, England. And she's been an Alexander Technique teacher for about 15 years and a craniosacral, practitioner for for about 4 years. And we're going to talk today about how those two processes relate to each other. Dushka, welcome to the show.
Hello, Robert, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. Could you start by giving our listeners a 2 or 3 sentence description of the Alexander technique first?
Yes, of course. Well, I would say that the Alexander technique is really a unique and practical method of becoming aware of how we use our minds and our bodies in daily activity. And it's a simple and straightforward way in which we improve ease of movement and coordination. And it's not a series of treatments, or it's not a therapy, or it's not a series of exercises, but really it's a re-education of both the mind and the body, I would say.
And craniosacral therapy, what's that all about?
Now here we come across a difficulty, because craniosacral therapy is really one of the most non-verbal therapies I can think of. So yes, it means that it's almost impossible to talk about. So how do we describe the indescribable? However, I would say that we could say something like we use a very gentle listening touch. And craniosacral therapy really offers an unparalleled stillness to both body and mind. And that really, this stillness is really the hallmark of a craniosacral treatment, and it helps to restore the natural balance of the body, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I myself have been an Alexander Technique teacher for a great many years, and I have for at least the last 20 odd years, a little more, have had quite a bit of cranial work myself, and in my experience, the two processes are extremely complementary.
Yes.
Would that be your take on it as well?
I think that's exactly right. I feel very fortunate to have come to it already having an Alexander training under my belt, because it gives me the framework to be able to work. What Cranio does is that it allows a much, much quieter approach. As you know, in an Alexander lesson, we work with people on the table, generally in what we call the semi-supine position, which is to have our knees raised. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is that it allows the back to just release to its maximum. As always, when in an Alexander lesson, we're not looking for positions, but we're looking for release. Mm-hmm. Now, a cranio session simply takes that much further. We allow the quietest of touches, and whereas the Alexander table lesson can be, table part of the lesson will be, I don't know, 20 minutes, quarter of an hour, whatever seems. In a cranio session, that will last probably about an hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I find it very compatible. I find that the cranio work has allowed my hands to become far more sensitive, and even quieter than they were before, actually.
Yeah. I would say that from my own experience, cranial work is in a sense less demanding of a student. That is, you could even fall asleep during a cranial session and it would be okay. At least that's what, you know, you don't have to be present the whole time. You might drift off. Whereas I think most Alexander teachers would prefer that you have your eyes open and be present and noticing what's going on and maybe even doing some simple movement experiments when you're lying on the table, like moving an arm or a leg. And we should add that table work in the Alexander technique world is just one of several procedures, most of which are more active than lying on a table. Whereas cranial work, as far as I know, it's all table work.
Yes, it is all table work. We do occasionally work with someone sitting if, for example, they're disabled or let's say they're heavily pregnant and they find it difficult to lie down. But yes, it's generally on a table. But you're right. And I think that this is exactly where I find my cranio training incredibly helpful. I mean, I don't know about you, Robert, but I see a lot of people who, and more nowadays, who are very heavily stressed. They may have money worries. They may have demanding jobs. They may have young children or elderly parents or difficult relationships or maybe all of these things. And they can come to me for an Alexander lesson. And you and I know that sometimes it can take almost the whole lesson until I feel that suddenly their body has managed to release some of the extraordinary amount of tension that they may be carrying. Now, obviously with their consent, and we'll talk about this before the session starts, but sometimes I might suggest that we just allow some space and some quietness for them to just release a little more. And as you say, the one of the beauties of the craniosacral world is that there are no demands upon the pupil. I'm afraid in the cranial world we call them patients, which I don't like at all, or clients. So I prefer the pupil word that we use in Alexander world. But so there are no demands on them. And I think I do find that sometimes if people are in a bit of a state, that even an Alexander lesson can feel like just one more thing that they're not getting right, and that this very, very gentle, hands-on listening and being with someone and receiving them in their deepest, at the deepest level, can be very resourcing and refreshing. And I think it's really a very good combination.
Right. I mean, Alexander work is really about learning how to change the way you think about movement or yourself in movement. So in a sense, it does. I mean, there's certain things that there's some work you can get that doesn't necessarily involve that a lot. But the goal is always to get the student to start thinking about themselves and noticing. And for a lot of people, as you say, who are incredibly stressed, they're just not in a position to do that.
And that's
where something like cranial work, and there's some other somatic therapies that might be similar in that respect, that they don't really require you to do anything particularly except just be there.
Exactly. Yeah.
And of course, I came to cranial like you well after about 10 years into being an Alexander teacher. And, of course, my little analytical mind was going full force at first. Well, how does this relate to the technique and so on? And I came up with a kind of a model that the cranial work can get it at these subtle internal twists and turns in your musculature that are so, at least in my case, so complex that I don't think it might take many lifetimes of self-directing to release those on my own. They are incredible once you start exploring them, and it really helps to have another person there who can kind of do the thinking for you to help you release those, to discover what they are and to release them. And so to me, it seemed like it works really well at the subtlest level that most Alexander teaching can't really get at very quickly. And at the same time, there are some processes at the other end of the spectrum, perhaps of physical therapy or something, that can get at big things that the Alexander technique, again, might take it a long time to deal with. Like if you have a major imbalance in your pelvis, for example,
sure.
You know, an osteopath might be a good place to go to, something that'll just kind of get at that big stuff quickly so that then you can apply Alexander more effectively. To me, the Alexander is like all about consciousness, using
yes.
your conscious mind. Cranial is about letting someone help you, and maybe osteopathy or physical therapy or manipulation of some kind is about having someone kind of whack you into a new relationship
yes.
that you can then start to explore. Does that all make sense to you? I've seen it.
No, I think it makes complete sense. And I've often sort of described craniosacral therapy as almost like a psychotherapy, but it through the body.
Yeah.
And I think I said at the beginning of this talk that it's such a non-verbal therapy that this is almost why it's difficult to talk about. So you could almost have a triangle of psychotherapy on one end, which is very much the verbal and through the mind to look at various issues that you may have. You've got craniosacral therapy, which can address those same issues on a very different level.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you have Alexander in the middle, which uniquely in a sense manages to address both these things. I mean, as you know, one of Alexander's books was Conscious Control. I've now forgotten the Constructive Conscious Control. That's the one. So we're very much asking, as you say, for the person to be engaged in the process. Whereas with cranio, we are allowing the body to speak in a sense.
For someone who's in pain or has an injury, not really able to mobilize their thinking all that well, cranial has some advantages. And the other place has a lot of advantages. And the other area which is kind of interesting is most, at least the cranial therapists that I've known, most of them, at least occasionally, work with very small children or babies.
Indeed.
And,
I mean,
And when I heard that, I thought, boy, because I'm sure I had some birth type issues, you know, I kind of picked up on that from the cranial work.
Yeah.
I could imagine that if a week old or so, I'd had a bit of cranial work, it could have made a gigantic difference in my life.
Yes.
Gigantic difference.
Yes,
because
I mean,
I have the sense that my shoulder got caught in the exiting process. I mean, who knows, because I wasn't really there consciously at the time. But something like that, some kind of maladjustment in a small baby's musculature could be so quickly and easily sorted out by a cranial session or two, I would think.
Yes, and it is, as you say, it's the therapy is probably most well known for its success in helping babies deal with the trauma of birth. And I mean, a lot of the colicky issues that babies have in the first 6 months could be, you can sometimes see that's due to a stress pattern. For example, you know, the body closes up and the baby's little stomachs and all those little valves are just too tight as a result of tightening and as a result of shock.
It's not going to do a lot of good to tell your baby to release up or anything like that.
So the very gentle, it's not really a manipulation, but the incredibly gentle touch of craniosacral therapy can allow those really deeply held patterns well, in a baby, they're probably not going to be so deeply held, but they're very much present, and they can allow them to release in a very gentle way.
And the cranial therapist that I go to regularly in Toronto, I asked her about how she works with children, you know, not babies, but young children, and how they react to it. And she says they pretty much always just love it, you know, without necessarily having any way of describing it exactly. But it's real popular. Whereas, you know, a parent with a small child who has postural issues, for example, and says, well, I'm going to send the kid to an Alexander teacher. That's not something most Alexander teachers want to deal with, because
no, it isn't.
It is really a can of worms at many levels. Whereas, you know, a bit of cranial work could make all the difference. And
Yes, I mean the children. I must say, I have treated children, well, mainly my family children, because in my practice I don't tend to see that many children, but the children of my family just all absolutely love it and come running and asking for a cranio session. So it's I think a friend of mine who is also a therapist described it as like having someone meditate for you, and I think that was a lovely way of putting it, but you've also got the body touch in there as well.
Yeah, you really do have a sense that you can, I mean, especially if you've been working with someone for a while and you have confidence in them, you can kind of surrender to that touch.
Yes.
I just think to myself, well, you know, Nancy's going to take care of it now.
Yes.
I don't really need, I'm just going to let whatever happen. I'm not going to get in the way. I'm going to get myself out of the way.
So yes, it is, as I said, it is, you feel that you've been heard, I suppose. It's a very difficult, it's difficult to talk about, as I keep saying, but you feel that you've been almost received or heard in such a profound level. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I know I've had experiences on the cranial table where I've looked at long-standing problems in a completely new light. I've been able to turn around and almost go towards an area of difficulty that I don't think I could have experienced in any other way. Everybody has very different experiences with this therapy. So some people may have great big dream journeys. Some people may hear things. Some people will have a very physical sensations. Some people, as you say, may just go to sleep. But it does feel very resourcing at a very deep level.
Mm-hmm. So just in conclusion, what would you say? I mean, it sounds one could I suppose listen to what we've talked about so far and say, well, I'm kind of a lazy person by nature. I'm just going to do the cranial stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really want to bother with any actual learning. It's going to take some effort. What would be a reason for someone that's had some cranial work to explore the Alexander technique?
I think that if you find, for example, let's say you have something like sciatica, mm-hmm. Or some sort of low back pain, yes, cranio will really help it. It will help to release the tissues around that. We might start exploring the emotional reasons that may come up for any emotional patterning that's gone on. But I might suggest to somebody who, if this seems to be recurrent, they come back to me several times with this, I might suggest that we might have a look at the way that they stand or that they sit, just to make sure that there's nothing that they're doing to themselves that's actually making this problem worse. I think I should also quickly say that I would always suggest that someone visits their doctor if they have a problem of any medical nature, because mm-hmm. while Alexander and craniotherapy, both brilliant therapies, we're not doctors.
Right. And I guess another thing that would be worth mentioning is that the Alexander technique does give you tools that you can use to work on yourself, as it were.
Yes.
For most people, I think, who take craniosacral sessions, it's basically they go, they get the experience, they get the changes, and then they come back later. I don't. There's not a big self-help component to that,
No,
usually.
I agree, and for me that's why I find it such a brilliant combination, because I do find the Alexander technique to be such an empowering technique. Is it really starts to hand back to the pupil some tools that they can use on an everyday level, and yes, cranio may operate at completely different levels, but that is one area that it doesn't have. Yeah. I agree.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to mention?
I don't think so. And I suppose that craniosacral therapy really is like, if it's like taking the non-doing aspect or of the Alexander work, this into a completely different dimension. But this may be a too late a stage to start discussing the whole non-doing or inhibition aspect of it, which are very familiar terms for Alexander teachers.
Right, but for sure, it is entirely compatible with
Yes.
Alexander. It doesn't. It's hard to imagine it interfering with Alexander lessons. In fact, I would imagine it would enhance lessons if you were taking them.
Yes, it
So.
completely enhanced. I would say it's a perfect complement, not only to an Alexander lesson, but actually to the listening therapies, the psychotherapies as well. Very much so.
Well, my guest today has been Dushka Hatton, who is an Alexander Technique teacher and a cranial sacral therapist in London, England. We'll put a link to her website if you live in the London area, and you're interested in either or both of those modalities. She'd be a good person to see. I'll also put a link to a site that will give you more information about the Alexander technique and enable you to find a teacher anywhere in the world. And maybe there's a site for cranial. I don't know. It's a little more fragmented, isn't it?
The cranial world, yes,
Organizationally, that is. Yeah.
we have a like we have something called the Craniosacral Therapy Association of the UK, of which I'm a council member, in fact. But that would always be the best place to start to find a therapist.
Okay, so I'll get that link from you, and we'll put that
Yes.
by the interview as well.
Great.
So, Dushka, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, Robert, thank you very much indeed. I very much enjoyed it.